And here is a man who has lost all interest in football. Actually, not really. Are you interested in finals when your team's not in it?
Oh, yeah. I actually watch probably 3 or 4 hours of footy finals on the weekend.
I'd love to work.
When you tune in to see the best teams in action. Lance blew me away. I thought that was just spectacular. And, you know, I'm obviously keeping an interest to make sure Collingwood doesn't win anything, so which is, you know, the prime role of every, you know, dedicated Richmond supporter and every other Melbourne
and Essendon supporter.
That's right. So yes. I'll keep an eye on that. And I'm really hoping that the Cats don't go back-to-back. I sort of develop the tall poppy syndrome pretty quickly.
You do. But then you'd love to do that. You like to go to many a board meeting and cut down as many of those poppies as you can. You'll be doing that very much in the next week or so, is that right?
Oh, well, the AGM season is starts late September through to November, so there's 1,200 AGMs in 9 weeks. So I'll probably try and get to 20 or 30.
Of course you will.
I'm running for 3 boards, and yeah, it's good fun.
Still makes time to come in and talk to you and me, isn't that great? Stephen Mayne, shareholder activist, do you think the world is going to end tomorrow?
Well, I must admit, when I saw that the US government was bailing out Freddie and Fannie, I thought that the financial world was about to end. meteorites or whatever, but I mean, the world's biggest bailout. Just popped up on a Saturday, a lazy Sunday afternoon. Here's $200 billion. The two boards and the CEOs of the companies that control half the US housing market sacked over the weekend. You're gone. We're appointing bureaucrats or bankers we appoint to run the show. And the share prices of those two companies, I love this, fell by 92% and 83% respectively.
Yes.
So the equivalent of Westpac and Commonwealth Bank, which are the two biggest banks in Australia that will soon control almost half of our home loan market, it's the equivalent of getting into work on Monday morning and being told that Westpac and the Commonwealth Bank have just been taken over and the government's now in charge of 50% of the home loan market, and the shareholders are getting nothing, and we're lending them $200 billion to keep their loan book alive because they're ridiculously huge. They owe $5 trillion, a lot of it to the rest of the world. The rest of the world's getting nervous.
But you say that you're surprised, but was there really any other option for the US government?
Well, I guess it's been sort of teetering for a while, but I mean, when you come in and just sack the board and just take over like that, and then you cause a 3-4% surge in stock markets around the world, creating hundreds of billions of dollars of value, clearly the markets were surprised too. I mean, no one was expecting that they'd come out and do this. At first you say, yay, the Americans aren't going broke. You know, the Chinese government, which has got $1 trillion invested in US bonds, including with Fannie and Freddie, they'll keep lending the Americans money, so will the Japanese, we can relax. And then you sort of think about it, and that's what happened today, when our market fell a couple of percent today. You say, well, gee, the Americans must really be stuffed. Like, they already owe $9 trillion, the American government, and now they're taking on another $5 trillion. That's $14 trillion. They're running a $400 billion budget deficit. By jingo, you thought Nathan Rees had a tough job in New South Wales. Barack
yes.
Obama and John McCain, one of them's going to have to jack up taxes massively and slash...
Well, I was going to say, what impact does that have on a campaign then? I mean, it reminds me, interestingly enough, of season 7 of The West Wing, when, in fact, what happened, you know, they went to Kazakhstan, etc., and that's what the burden was of the incoming president. In this instance, it's a financial burden, but a massive one for whichever side ends up having to take up the reins.
It is. Look, they're going to have to be honest and say, maybe they should send Jeff Kennett over there. I mean, you know, Jeff Kennett came in and got rid of 100,000 jobs, sold off $40 billion worth of assets, poll tax, 10% increase in utilities charges, closed 350 schools. I mean, they just need a dose of Jeff Kennett, I think, over there in the US, because literally their financial system is stuffed. A lot of their big Wall Street firms are being bailed out by foreign government sovereign funds. Now the US government, which hasn't got much left in the tank, is writing out huge checks to stand behind Freddie and Fannie in the hope that it will end the free fall in the housing market. At the end of the day, it's the free fall in the housing market which has made Freddie and Fannie insolvent and has smashed confidence in
them. Will that achieve that?
Well, that's the plan, is step in, announce that you're putting the US government behind Freddie and Fannie, and then housing market stabilises, house prices recover a bit, and Freddie and Fannie can slowly over time go from insuring or lending $5 trillion to, and I heard Warren Buffett on the TV last night saying that they're just too big, they're too huge, they should be about $250 billion each. So there should be, you know, government involvement in the mortgage market in the US, you know, a couple of players at 5 or maybe 10% max, and you know, $250 billion in loans tops, greasing the wheels for the lower end of the mortgage market, keeping things ticking over. not, you know, 50% of the market and so huge.
How did that come about, though? How did they end up getting 50% of the market? Was
well,
there just
I guess
no competition?
There was always this implied guarantee that the US government would stand behind it. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Mm-hmm. And then the Freddie and Fannie guys sort of got on, started trying to impress Wall Street, and they started basically fudging their capital figures, and then they just kept on borrowing, and because they had this implied guarantee, they could borrow more cheaply. Mm. And then massively exposed to a housing crash. Housing crash happens, they're insolvent. Government steps in, and now at least it's a much better situation. Now it's government-owned, that's it. Whereas before we had this ridiculous halfway house, and it was always implied, it was never implicit. It's either completely private, it's either like the Commonwealth Bank, it's just private, that's it. Or it's a government bank, totally. And they've finally now ended the uncertainty and made it explicit and clear.
Well, it sounds a bit then those who got sacked deserved it.
Oh, I think so, totally. I mean, I like how the new boards have been banned from lobbying, because basically it's a, this is Peter Costello's comment, that it's basically regulatory failure. Many congresses ago, they established these things. They always let them have very, very skinny capital. They basically lied about their capital requirements. I mean, here's the Treasury of the Secretary in the US, Hank Paulson, saying, well, they said they were well capitalised, but they weren't. They were lying. It wasn't real capital. I mean, when you can't. So who do you trust these days? I mean, you know, in New South Wales... Well, no, you don't trust me, but in New South Wales, the Treasurer comes out after he's been sacked and says, we're stuffed.
Yes.
This is the true state of the books.
Yes.
All these companies here have been doing it, saying, you know, Centro, we're fine. Suddenly Centro owes $5 billion, they're stuffed.
Well, talking about New South Wales then, I mean, does Jeff Kennett need to go up there and say, now, this is what I did in the 90s and this is what you need to do here? Just like you're saying that you should do with the US.
Well, I think it's quite ironic that the former Victorian Treasurer, Alan Stockdale, is actually a director of this body called TCorp, which manages the New South Wales central debt.
Ah.
So it's quite ironic that the Labor government up there appointed the former Liberal Treasurer to be on the Debt Management Authority when Stockdale was the greatest debt reducer in the history of Australia. I mean, he cut Victoria's debt from $33 billion to $12 billion and sold off $40 billion worth of assets. So I can imagine what is Alan Stockdale telling them to do. And basically, you know, it's all those things I mentioned before. You got to slash jobs. I mean, they won't do it. What they'll do up there is they'll cut their infrastructure program. They've promised to spend $57 billion over 4 years on infrastructure, and they're borrowing $19 million a day. That's what they're doing in New South Wales. Their borrowing program, their new borrowing program this year is $6.8 billion, and Victoria's is only $3.4 billion. So we're borrowing about $9 million a day, and they're borrowing a bit under $19 million a day. And that's, you can't keep doing that. I mean, they're sitting at $30 billion of debt now in New South Wales, whereas we're sitting at $14 billion. So our debt is half. And their debt is rising at double our rate at 6.8 billion. Plus, they already have the highest taxes in the country. Whereas Queensland, which has more debt again, 33 billion, and is borrowing 6 billion a year as well, at least they have the lowest taxes in the country, and they have fully funded super.
Right.
So they've got a few things covered.
The thing about New South Wales, though, is that you talk about, you know, slashing infrastructure. It's the infrastructure that's in a parlous state. And that's just a sure way of saying, hi, here's the next election to the opposition. So they're caught between the proverbial rock and hard place.
Well, that's right. You can't jack up your taxes too much when you're already the highest taxing state. I mean, at the end of the day, they have to. I mean, it's very unpalatable to say this, particularly to a Labor government staffed with the union leaders, that you're going to have to shed tens of thousands of public servants. Because public servants' wages are 70% of a state government's recurrent expenditures. Yeah. You can't talk about tightening...
But you're talking teachers and hospital workers.
That's right. I mean, Jeff Kennett got rid of 10,000 teachers. I mean, Jeff Kennett cut the public sector workforce in Victoria from 260,000 to 160,000, partly from privatisation and outsourcing and partly just from culling. I mean, it went too far. It went way too far. But that's what he did when he was in... when Victoria had an equivalent financial crisis after credit rating downgrades. And that's what New South Wales is going into. And what are they going to do? I mean, I think the other solution is they need to get bailed out by the feds. And they've got the perfect solution. The new deputy premier up there is Carmel Tebbit, who's married to the head of infrastructure in the federal government, Anthony Albanese.
Oh,
and Anthony Albanese is Mr. Infrastructure. I was at the federal budget lockup earlier this year, and Wayne Swan gave his press conference, and then he introduced Anthony Albanese, who instantly started talking about infrastructure spending and started off in Western Sydney. So clearly, the new deputy premier's just got to speak to her husband
and
say,
pillow talk, as you're saying.
Yeah, pillow talk to her husband and say, look, how about you take on $20 billion of our $57 billion infrastructure program, and we'll be fine. And I think it would be a political disaster, but it's actually the logical thing to happen, because the states have got no money, the feds have got all the cash. in Australia, yeah, in our lopsided federation.
Quickly, I just mentioned what's happening with Origin Energy, because what is the story there?
Well, Origin Energy, this big British company, BG, was going to buy them for $15 billion. And because they have all these gas assets up in Queensland. And yesterday, this big Texan company, ConocoPhillips, came along and said, well, you Brits might be worth $120 billion, but we're worth $130 billion, and we're going to offer $5 billion US cash up front, just for half of the gas assets, and then we'll spend another $2 or $3 billion building a big LNG plant in Gladstone. And so British Gas has happened and has walked away. And there's a very simple solution here. John Brumby should ring up British Gas and say, you wanted to spend $15 billion buying all that gas buried in the coal assets of Queensland. We've actually got just as much gas sitting in the Latrobe Valley in the Gippsland Basin under all our dirty brown coal power stations. Come on down here and spend a few billion buying our coal-fired power stations and knocking them down and building new gas-fired power stations instead, which will make Australia the world's best performer in reduction of greenhouse gas emissions and make you a fortune, just like you were planning to do with all your LNG exports to China and Japan, which is the whole Queensland place. I'm amazed no one talks about Victoria's gas when they're all going bananas about Queensland gas.
I hope you're listening, Premier.